Boom. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, Palace fans from around the world. Welcome to another edition of the Red and Blue Review. My name is Ian Noble, and I'm sitting in for Nick Philpott this evening, who's still sunning himself on a beach somewhere in Europe, I believe. And with me tonight, I've got the A-team, as you can see, joining me on screen. I have Lucy Asher, everyone. Hello, Lucy. Good evening.
Hello, Ian. Thank you for having me here tonight.
It's a pleasure. I'm glad you could join us. And Jill Lord Holyoke. Good evening to you, sir.
Hello, mate. You all right?
Yeah, very good. A little bit of a delay there because in Alpington. It's on a different time zone, obviously, to the rest of the world. And back by popular demand for the second week running after a fair absence, Mr. Ian Lyons. Welcome, Ian.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you for having me back. I think the popular demand's pushing it a little bit. let's wait until after tonight, shall we?
You had a birthday this week, is that right, as well?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. So you're catching me up, I believe. That's what I'm told anyway. So
I will never catch 60.
You up. good stuff.
That was last year, Joe.
There we go. Welcome, everybody. It's really good to see you. So many people joining us already in the chat, and we'll come to you guys very, very shortly. Before we get things underway, Lucy, you've got a few sort of somber words to say about somebody who's passed away recently.
Yeah, that's right. So I just want to put out a heartfelt sort of love and respect to Alan Larkham's family. Alan, a longtime Palace fan and season ticket holder, followed Palace everywhere. Sadly, he passed away a few days ago on Sunday. So just would like everyone to wish his family, especially sort of Suzanne and everyone, you know, you're in our thoughts. Much love to you. And send them our love and regards in the comments as well. Let them feel the Palace love. You're all very much in our thoughts. Rest in peace, Alan.
Well said, Lucy. Yes, rest in peace, Alan, of course. Now, before we review last night's game, because that's the main talking point of this evening, before we get to those talking points, it's been a busy week in the life of Crystal Palace Football Club since our last show. And I just want to touch on a few bits of news about some of our academy lads. So Malachi Boateng has joined Scottish Championship club Queen's Park on loan. Jez Ragsacki, he's signed a 5-year deal with Crystal Palace, committing his future to the club until 2027. But he's joined League One club Charlton, and he starts for them this evening, apparently, making his debut. Mm. I sort of like saying that. League One Charlton. Let's say it again. League One Charlton. Okay. Jez, hope you have a great season. Scott Banks has joined League Two club Bradford on loan. And manager there at Bradford, you know, is Mark Hughes, of all people. Boo as well. So we wish him well at Bradford. Next up, Tayo Adaramola. He's joined Championship club Coventry City. Now, their game against Wigan tonight in the Championship is postponed. No idea why that's off. Someone might know in the chat. They could tell us about that. So he's joined Coventry. And Academy prospect David Ozo. He signed a professional contract with the club. 17-year-old midfielder played a major part in Rob Quinn's under-18 side last season, making 28 appearances in all competitions. And then we've signed a young lad from Larne FC in Northern Ireland. Kofi Barmer, 21-year-old defender. So welcome to the club for you, matey. And then finally, Sean Grehan is the second academy arrival this summer. He is also a centre-back and Dublin-born lad. So we're getting the Irish lads in. We've got Killian Phillips as well, of course, playing in the under-21s. So that's great stuff. Welcome to Crystal Palace, all you guys that are joining us. And I wish all those academy lads well in their loan spells, out getting valuable experience in the lower leagues. Now, later in the show, we'll look at the under-21 games this last week. Since we last did the show, the under-21s have played twice and won twice. We've got an under-18 match to look at as well, a little bit briefly. We're going to preview Villa and Oxford. We'll talk about the Channel 4 documentary, Football Dreams, The Academy. We'll touch on our Super 6 and FPL early leaders. But before we do any of that, of course, I got back from Liverpool about lunchtime today. It was a lovely night up there, and I think the result exceeded our expectations in the end. Let's have a look at the lineup, Nige. We have producer guy Nige to show us the lineup, and we'll cover that. So, He needs to put it on screen. There we are. Thank you very much. Guiza in goal, of course, and interesting lineup. I was thinking a bit pre-game when that came out at 7 p.m. last night. Five across the back: Klein, Ward, Anderson, Gihi, and Mitchell across the back. Doucouré in a sort of holding role, Slupeneze in midfield with Ayew, and then our two main forwards, Edouard and Mateta, left on the bench. And we'll come to it later in the game, but didn't Patrick Vieira use his subs well last night? I think arguably we've had the hardest start in the Premier League. The fixture list has not been kind to us. Arsenal, Liverpool, Man City in the first four games. So I'm going to come to you first, Ian Lyons. Talk us through that first half yesterday and your thoughts really about the lineup as well and expectations.
Okay, before I do so, just to let you know, Coventry's game's called off like their other games because of the state of their pitch after the Commonwealth Games because they played the Sevens rugby on it, so it's still a pile of rubbish. Not that it'll probably improve what their game, but there you go, that's why. Okay, so before, let's set the scene then. On last week's show, I certainly was very pessimistic as to what this outcome was going to be. You know, you touched on it earlier, just a minute ago, Ian, that I think statistically we have the hardest start to any Premier League campaign in its 30-year history based on where those teams finished at the end of the season. Clearly, Man United are proving to be a little nice little bonus for everyone at the minute. So clearly, after Liverpool's draw, humbling draw, at the hands of Gel's number one striker, Mitrovic, we were looking to get on the back of a hiding, I think. And that's certainly what we were expecting. We've lost the last 10 meetings, conceding 30 goals. But on the bright side, there was no Mane, who always scores against us. And before the game, Liverpool had conceded first in their last five Prem games. So there was always the potential to get one in the net. So, as you said, change of system. So nice to see Vieira changing the system accordingly. You know, we've been saying it for years and years and years. You know, you need to understand your opposition and set up accordingly. Not to say that it wasn't fraught with danger. It gave me flashbacks of playing under Roy Hodgson, you know, just like the Alamo. But that's how it transpired. I mean, the first 10 minutes, we were second to everything. I mean, even in the first minute, Milner beat Ayew to a ball. The ball came out to Ayew and he just stood there waiting for it to come to him. And a 40-year-old, almost 40, beat him for pace, got straight in. Gaeta got injured straight away. So you're thinking, oh my God, we've got another 90-odd minutes of this. But fortunately, nothing happened there. And soon after, then Harvey Elliott gets into a bit of space and then gets a shot. Anderson's blocked it, followed up by a Nunes snatch shot. And it's probably not the most sane thing he did in the game, as we'll cover later. In that period, in that first 15 minutes, we hardly got the ball down and touched it, touched the ball and got it down. We were just panicking. And we had serious issues with such an overloaded defence, transitioning from defence to midfield and midfield up to Wilf. And they just kept coming back, wave after wave. And I made a note to say that it's the 11th minute. It's taken until the 11th minute for us to get the ball down and pass it, where Jeffrey Schlupp did. And then when we did, we broke and got across into the box. But up until that point, it was looking disjointed. Still an effect, I think, from pre-season. Then, Eze on 17 minutes started to, who'd been quiet up to that point, sparked into a bit of life. I still think he's struggling. He still needs a few more games to get into to the swing of things. But he broke through he broke through and was played through by Wilf, which again we saw against Arsenal, didn't we? That little link up, which was promising, but he hit it straight at the keeper. Thankfully, he was offside. But yet again, I think he needs to go to have a bit of shooting practice. Then they came back as more panic defending, Mitchell slicing it, Ward heading it, and it's just going up in the air and landing to one of their players, etc. And that in itself, you know, just builds a pressure on the team, because they're actually displaying how nervous and anxious they are by snatching at stuff. Then they started to double up on Mitchell. Mitchell up until that point had been doing a really, really good job on Salah, I thought. Yep. Then Trent Alexander was overloading on him, and that started causing us problems as they were starting to get round. But even though, I mean, by this time, I'm talking about 20, 25 minutes, 30 minutes, the crowd, we'd subdued the crowd, right? Because we were just putting up a white wall. Ward at the time was playing superb. Gay and Anderson were covering for each other. Mitchell, as I already said, had done really well as well. And it didn't look, or I at no point did I think they're going to cut us open, but with the amount of pressure, you just know something's coming. Yeah. But on that, on 31 minutes, the something that was coming was actually from us. The ball comes out from the goalkeeper, straight to Eze, sparks into a bit of brilliance, takes it down, and in the next touch, beats the press of the two players. And again, what I love about Eze is when he's a Rolls Royce, isn't he? Let's be honest. When he's on the ball, you know, he'll drop his shoulder, drop people on the floor. You know, he moves effortlessly. Up until that point, he'd either lost the ball or whatever. But that one split second, he showed his quality, laid up a perfectly weighted ball to Wilf, who still had a lot of work to do. And up until that point, it was noticeable that Wilf was pulling on to the other centre half. I can't remember his name now. But Dan Phillips. All right, so he's pulling off onto his shoulder rather than coming up against Van Dijk. And I think that played into it. He then broke free, and didn't he finish it well? I mean, I think after the game, they were saying it was Henry-esque. The reason Van Dijk could well have closed him down, but the thought is that he didn't, because he knew he had like pretty much the best goalkeeper, or one of the best goalkeepers in the world, who's very rarely beaten from that type of angle. Superb finish in off the post. And it was so quiet at the time, you could hear it hit the post and then the net, and then, you know, everything just exploded.
And then so, Wilf looked back, didn't he, Ian? He didn't celebrate straight away. He sort of looked and just checked that he wasn't offside.
And he was right to do so, because it was really, really close. I don't know if you've seen it since, Ian, but Phillips' back leg played him on. That was the beauty of that pass and that finish. So, of course, Anfield is stunned. I mean, what was it like when that goal went in? Was it hard to believe? Because obviously it was at the other end.
It was hard to believe, and it was hard to see, actually, you know, because I was about 15 rows back, and you saw the ball get passed forward, but you couldn't tell whether he was off or on. You know, it was no different from the earlier one that you mentioned when the roles were reversed and Wilf played Eze in, and you thought, is he off, is he on? And, you know, obviously when you watch it back, it's clear. But when you're in the away end at Anfield, you can't really see. But when it went in and he just wheeled away, crikey, there were limbs, mate, in that away end. It was absolutely fabulous.
I can imagine. I've got to say, they must be sick. I know that they've beaten us in the last 10 times, but we've taken so many points off them over the last 5 years, 6 years at Anfield. You know, they must be sick to the back of us. But once a goal went in, it was then all Palace for 5-6 minutes. Eze then put Wilf through again, but this time it was such a tame shot. It was actually a better chance than the original one. He was onside again, should have stuffed it. Then Cech Doucouré, who had been worryingly quiet, but then again, you've got to consider it's the opposition is against and they're overloaded and everything else. He then suddenly pipes up and then has a long range effort as well. So we're actually getting out and building a pressure. We're actually playing the way we should have done. We've got the goal ahead and then we're trying to catch them even more on a break. And then with 5 minutes to go the first half, Doucouré then puts Wilf through again. and he hits it straight at the keeper again. You know, he's having he's having a lot of joy playing on Philip's shoulder. But it just shows you how important that first strike was, because there were two easier chances and he's fluffed his lines. And then right at the death, there was like 3 minutes of injury time. Nunes is clearing on goal, miskicks it and hits the post. And you just think, oh, can someone blow the whistle? You know, that's it. That's over.
I wasn't watching this stage. I was like this.
Yeah, I can imagine. So that was the first half.
Yeah, thank you, Ian, very much indeed. Jill, you obviously watched the game as well. Is there anything that Ian hasn't mentioned that you think, why didn't he mention that?
No, not really. The only thing I will say is, had that been a Liverpool goal, our goal being a Liverpool goal, it'd still be on repeat on Sky and YouTube and Twitter and everything. That touch from Eze to kill those two players, stone dead, take them out of the game, is what it seems to be. I mean, I don't know if you noticed, but they literally only put the odd player on Wilf. Sometimes they doubled up on him, but Eze, they doubled, trebled, four up on him sometimes to stop him from turning. Look at somebody where he turns himself into trouble sometimes, but he's got that strength and a little bit of pace to jump out of it. They kept literally having to foul him.
Yeah, totally. And you mentioned that, I think it was Gary Neville said that the goal was Henry-esque.
Yeah.
There's a bit of feedback on now, but never mind. Henry-esque. But I've also seen on social media that Eze's touch and the pass was likened to Bergkamp, which made me smile as well. You know, so we got all these Arsenal links, but hey-ho. Lucy, in the chat, what are people saying about the game?
Oh, okay, right, let's have a look. So there's plenty of hellos and we'll come to you very shortly. However, what are our sort of lovely viewers what saying about the game? So we've got Tom Clark Samuel. Hey, Tom, thanks for everything you do in the background. Said that the pitch was unplayable. I don't think it was unplayable. Was it just a bit wet and slippery?
Too wet.
Is that what it was? Been watered too much? The rest of the UK is on fire, but that pitch is fine. Okay, so we've also got Kevin Lyon saying he was in the prawn sandwiches with loads of overly partisan Liverpool fans. So that's good. Also, we have sort of lots of comments sort of coming into sort of the threats against Anderson, but more of that later on. So don't fear, we will come to that. Mikko Koronen says the away stand at Liverpool is one of the worst in the country. Lots of hellos from different people there. Uriel Hilaire Miller, Anderson has large pockets, though Nunes fits just right. I think we'd all agree with that. Tim Richard says last night was a PVA managerial masterclass, completely outthought Klopp. Would you say that if it was Roy? It was very Roy Ball. But anyway, how many saves did VG have to make? What did Salah do? Ward and Klein, outstanding. MG and JA, superb. Only one weak link. Also, Jones asking, what injury did Guata get? I think it was egg bruise to the shin, which they wrapped in cling film, which was which took up a bit of time, so that was good. Hello to Palace Pins as well. Paul Holden, will Luke Plonge get some time? Is it Plonge? I know Joe will laugh at me saying that. Also, we have sort of Paul Holden saying, yeah, the grass was too wet. And also Kevin Lyon, hello Kev, the Liverpool fans around him were accusing Palace of time wasting when they were passing to each other. They were absolutely delusional. And also we've got here, Teresa, hey Teresa, the biggest problem with only Zaha up front, it makes him look lazy when sort of perhaps he's not. Back to you, Mr. Noble.
Yeah, thanks, Lucy, for that. And thanks, everyone. So, yeah, goodness me. First half, 1-0. We couldn't quite believe that we were going in leading last night. Just a word about the back five, or certainly the central three defenders. One thing I did notice when Mitchell did get beaten on one occasion by Salah, Mark Geary managed to get over and cover. Now, I think if there were only two centre-backs, he might not have been able to do that. And that enabled us to defend and absorb absolutely everything that Liverpool threw at us in that first half. And we rode our luck a bit, didn't we? Let's be clear. You know, it's one of those things. And we were fortunate in some respects. So, Ian, do you want us to talk us through the second half? You know, how you saw it. And, of course, the big talking point in the second half.
Sure. Yeah, just to... to touch on that, I think, you know, before, I think we, you know, when it's all said and done, we were still quite disjointed in the first half. I don't think we played anywhere as near as well as we can do. And I think that's getting lost in all this Nunes rubbish and, you know, and the woe is Liverpool, etc. I think it's important to know that from the entire game and the second half performance against Arsenal, I think there's a lot more still to come from us, which is obviously very, very promising. So, yeah, I think Kev touched on it in the comments about, you know, Liverpool fans complaining about us time wasting. And they're doing that from the start, to be fair. Every time, I think in the third minute, we had a goal kick and they're booing at him and trying to get him to take it, kick it quicker and everything else. They were booing every time Ayew went down. And actually, there's something I'd like to point out is I'm so pleased that refs are letting stuff go now. Yep. Because Ayew and Wilf, amongst a lot of others, John McGinn, Jamie Vardy, you know, lots of them, just go down way too easy. And it's frustrating for us as it is for other fans, because people like Ayew will be in a great position and he'll just throw himself to the ground without being touched. So, you know, I think as things go on, I think that will become one of the best rule changes if they stick to it. I think that's the key, if they stick to it. Right, so yeah, so the second half starts, they're already booing at us, complaining we're time wasting. In fact, the ref has a word with Ward on 47 minutes, just about that. And the first 5-10 minutes half, just see us simply kicking the ball up the pitch to relieve pressure. It's almost as if, having gone in at 1-0, 1-0 up, we're mentally on the defensive. Like, this is the Alamo. This is the last stand, boys. Let's see it out for 50 minutes. And then Doucouré starts to come into the game a bit more now, which was good to see. And then on 56 minutes, it probably was, I know it's the talking point in the match, and it probably was the turning point of the match as well. Nunes red card. I mean, and I would say, when I say it's nice to see, I don't mean it in that way. It's a proper headbutt, that deserved a red card. I know that you shouldn't be putting your head into anyone's face, but that was old school bang. And I think Anderson went down as much with shock as anything, that it, you know, it almost lost his bottom teeth in his forehead. And that all came about because Anderson was winding him up. He was roughing him up.
Yes.
You know, he was playing and getting him into his ear. And again, when you see the replays back, the ref is looking directly. And Nunes has already, you know, spoken to the ref and said, look, what's he doing, right, at the time? So he's drawing the ref's attention, then gets a bit of a shove from Anderson and then does that right in front of the ref. And then he's got the temerity to say, I did nothing wrong.
Yeah, Bruce. I know. Absolutely.
If you just see why Anderson is sort of races after him, it's because seconds before, Nunes sort of backs in and does like a cheeky back headbutt towards Anderson. It doesn't connect, but that's why when the ball goes out, Anderson's sort of coming up and gesturing and sort of giving him a poke, which he got a yellow for, fair dues. And then Nunes loses his head and sort of starts headbutting. So it's interesting that kind of little, he got suckered in, didn't he?
Yeah, but it had been a battle all game, hadn't it? And Anderson hadn't done anything wrong. I mean, I've read so much rubbish. I'd have bit of time to kill traveling back. I read so much rubbish being written about Anderson, you know, playing outside the rules. He didn't at all. He just played a really good game as a centre back, and he won the battle against centre forward. And as you're right, Lucy, he backed into him, and Anderson wasn't having that, which is why he touched him, and the reaction was unbelievable. Jill.
Yeah, no, I was just going to back up what Lucy said, but and again, just reiterate that the whole game they were at each other. I think Anderson roughed him up probably 5, 6, 7 times beforehand, but then he just started giving it back as well, which it was good to see. It was a good battle, but obviously, you know, things weren't going their way. You can see he's got a temperament problem, and I think he just played completely into our hands, really.
Yeah, absolutely. So, should we have done better with the goalie in lines? their equaliser?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was only like 5 minutes after, and as soon as they go down to 10 men, the alarm bells start ringing, because I can't remember the last time we've played well against 10 men. It's almost as if they've not had one sent off. They've had two extras brought on.
Yeah, yep. Maybe.
I'll tell you what. So there was a couple of things. Again, last night, Sky muted the Palace fans. You could hardly hear them throughout the game. And then after the sending off, Alan Smith said one of the most unbelievable things I've ever heard in a commentary. And he said, what Liverpool need to do now is get at the Palace players and get one of the players that's already been booked, try and get him sent off. I was like, what the fuck? Honestly,
language?
It was one of the worst things I've ever heard in commentary. And the wailing and gnashing of teeth, because Palace have had the absolute, I was going to say temerity, but just the absolute outrageousness to go up there. A, score. B, look like they might win. I mean, it was just a joke. It's the reason why many, many people, like myself, don't, Paul Bristow come at me about it. You know, if you watch Monday Night Football, I don't watch any other game ever if it's not about Palace. I don't watch it because football in this country makes me sick. The sycophancy from the hierarchy to the top six, seven teams is just, it's just appalling. And like I said, I'm under no illusion at all that we are the equivalent of what Wimbledon used to do back in the 90s. That's what we are. And I think they'd like nothing better than for us to just scuttle on back to the Championship and be the small little tin pot team that they all think we are.
Say what you think, Joe. That's what we like about you on this show. Say what you really think. I'm going to come back to Ian now. Talk us about the goal, the equaliser. Yeah, I
mean, listen, Joe's right. We're regarded as anti-establishment now, you know, because we keep upsetting the top team's party. You know, Man City probably know what's coming next. But... yeah, so that then led on, 10 men led on inevitably to their equaliser. And let's be honest, I thought Diaz was probably the best player on the pitch. I thought he had an absolute superb game. And when you compare the amount they paid for him compared to Nunes, 20 million or so is difference, but nevertheless, you know, he's by far and away showing that he's a better player. I think we could have, I saw Joan say something about it, and I think she's right, in that we could certainly have got a foot in. You know, all we've done is we've given him an escort around the... he started off with some great footwork, then gave him an escort across the penalty area, but then he stuffed it away. And that's what your players... That's what you want your players to do. You know, that's why he gets paid the big bucks. And he's like single-handedly pulled them back into the game. So, as soon as... And then all of a sudden, you can hear the fans as if someone's turned up. A bit like Arsenal when they scored. That's the only time you can actually hear them the other week. So then obviously you've got the atmosphere, you know, and it starts. And that's just more mental pressure that we've got to deal with. So Edouard comes on for Ayew. Don't think Ayew did much, to be honest, apart from throw himself on the floor all the time. Kept
the
Ayew
fan club on this podcast. We love it.
Well, listen, I like to think, credit where credit's due. Gave Luca credit last week for his performance when he came on. You give credit when he's actually done really well, but unfortunately, you know, he didn't do that well, and he didn't do that well against Arsenal either. So I thought it was the right move to bring Edouard on. Again, as we've spoken before, Vieira, I like the way Vieira makes his subs. He's not scared to make subs, and he does it for the right reason. Even if it goes wrong, you can see why he's doing it. So Edouard comes on, but doesn't make much of a difference initially. Liverpool are now dominating, and you know, we're simply not getting to grips with the 10. Then Ward gets a yellow card for an innocuous foul on Diaz. He chases him deep into their final third, almost on their penalty box. And doesn't take him out, just stands in, you know, and then gets a yellow card. And that goes back to what Joel was saying, because, you know, all of a sudden the card count starts coming up. And Alan Smith mentions it again about, you know, that's what you want to do. You want to get the yellow cards. but we're still second to every ball. We were so entrenched on holding out that 20, the edge of the 18-yard line. When the ball came out, none of us were closing it down. And oddly enough, I don't know if anyone else, multi-ball is supposed to speed things up. Yesterday, it seemed to slow things down. They were confusion as to what ball to go for and everything else. So, which was a bit odd. Wilf breaks with the ball, but DA's does some great work tracking him back. You think Wilf is away, tracks him back, bullies him off the ball, and then starts another attack. Eze passes the ball out of play for the third time, you know, in the match, where, you know, he nowhere near passing it to the player, just goes straight out of play. And it was quite a frustrating game from Eze. Shone brilliantly, very briefly, but overall, didn't really do a lot in the game destructively. And then 78 minutes, we suddenly burst into life again. A great cross from Decore, but Wilf on the far post doesn't get it in. Now, I thought he hit the post, but you'd be better to see whether he did or not, Ian. Did he?
Oh, in the ground, we couldn't tell. But actually, watching it back, absolutely he hit the post. But what he should have done, he should have hit it with his left foot instead of his right. He hit it with the outside of his right foot, and he needed to connect with his left foot. But, you know, it is what it is. You know, he did well to get there, I thought. But he hit the post.
But it was nice to see that we broke out and Decore having a bit of legs about him and getting across in. I think he'll go into things anyway. But Wilf could quite easily have had a hat-trick in that game if he was probably a little bit more clinical. So we certainly had the chances. Then Wilf gets into the box on 80 minutes, and instead of hitting the ball first time, tries to control it, falls over it, another opportunity spurned. And then towards the end, we were just messing around with it at the back when we were getting goal kicks. Gaeta just, you know, looking for Gay. He was actually on the goal line behind him, and we were...
I'm glad that was up the other end, because that gives you a heart attack, mate, watching
it. He certainly was watching it. I don't know why we weren't just stuffing it up. And then towards the end, Elise comes on. Great to see him back. I thought he did really well in that 5 minutes that he was on. And then VG was booked for time wasting before Anderson has a last minute effort and, you know, finishes one off.
It does. Right. I'm going to come to Jel first and then you, Lucy, for the chat. So, Jel, you were waiting very patiently in the wings there, mate.
Yeah, no. So, coming to the substitutions, I know you said that Patrick used his substitution very well. I slightly disagree that he only gave Michael Elise a few minutes, because what he did in that few minutes was more than I did in most of the game. And I'm pretty sure that if he was fit enough to come on as a sub, then I know I'm baiting IU again, but listen, honestly, Jesus. We played 9-1 as a formation, and I thought, well, probably 8-1, because I didn't see him do anything. Honestly, I didn't see him. He did that one thing where he fell over, expecting to get it. There it is.
Jordan Ayew's number one fan there. Please, can I have your shirt?
Do you know what? I'd hang that shirt up, honestly. I built a new bin shed around the side of my house.
You'd burn it.
I thought again, I wouldn't burn it. I'd never pay a shirt. But I'd see what I'd do. I'd take it to Kate Birdie and give it to one of them boys. Let him have that burden on his back. Anyway, you're saying about the referees. The referee, the Joel Ward, it was so, like you said, it was such an innocuous tackle. And the crowd, you know, the scream, oh, yellow card. And Diaz, scream. So he's gonna double it up. They're gonna get a yellow card. I just thought that we didn't deserve. Like you said, from the very first few minutes of the game, the crowd were on Guaita, and it was like you would have got 1 to 100 on that he was going to get a yellow card. It was so obvious. But I just, and Paul Glance is right, by the way, and he's just said in there that shirt would not fit me. You're right.
Right, Joe, I'm going to stop you there if I may. Teresa Baker says, leave Jordan alone. Thanks, Teresa. Lucy, what else have we got in the chat?
Okay, in the chat. And just before we go to the chat, I'm just going to agree with Ian Lyons. The messing about on the back line when sort of Guetta was sort of taking goal kicks and it was just going along like the sort of him and our sort of back defenders. He's just like, no, stop doing this. Don't do it. But then I did think, well, maybe it's because he's got like a big bruise on his cling filmed up shin. Maybe he can't kick the ball, but then they would just get them another player to kick the ball. Just don't be doing those tactics. Right, to the comments we go. Okay, so George, I agree with Jal. We should give Plonge or Eboe a shout. Steve Jupp, retire the nine shirt. Also, we have Kev Lyons. Everyone played well last night, bar AU maybe. Let's get a few bits. Paul Bristow, Nunes has put every Premier League defender on alert to nibble at him and he will react. I totally agree. He'll be the new kind of Zaha, won't he, where you know there's that temper and there's that passion. And they're also super easy to wind them up. So I'm going to enjoy watching that for the next few months. Also, Teresa says, I hate us playing against 10 men. Absolutely. I was watching with a couple of friends. I was like, right, 10 men, watch it. We're going to let one in. This is when Palace, for years, are at their sort of most sort of dangereux. Also, we have Paul Glantz saying their noise picked up after they went 10 down. And that's always the way, isn't it? Sort of the 11th/12th man trying to get it. Alan Smith needs to retire. Anderson passes were long balls and Van Dijk's were passes. Yeah, absolutely. Tim mentions it was on TalkSport. You haven't mentioned that much, Tim. Were you on TalkSport, were you? Let's also go on to bloody, bloody, blah. Kev Lyons again, the officials did well to ignore the crowd and the Liverpool moaning. I think they did get Vincent book though. Don't get me wrong, he was pushing his luck.
But as Ian said, it was like odds on he was going to get booked because they were booing him from minute five almost for taking goal kicks when he wasn't taking any longer than any other player, really.
Exactly, yeah. And he did have that egg bruise on his shin. Okay, Paul Holden, please can we have a shout out for Luke Plonge one more time? Of course you can. Back to you, Mr. Noble.
Thank you very much indeed, Lucy. I just want to say a few words about the substitutions. So I was quite impressed by the way Patrick used the substitutions in the second half. All five subs, three different periods, obviously. He brings three on together. He brings Hughes, Luca and Chris Richards on together with about 10 to play. Is that right? About 10 minutes to play still. And he took off players. You think, oh, what's he taking him for? But they know which players have got stuff in the tank still. They know which players are going to struggle in the last 10, 15 minutes with stoppage time. And I think that's why they did. And I thought Luca did fine, I thought Chris Richards did fine, and Hughes did what he had to do. Ian.
Yeah, I was just about to say that because, you know, I didn't give a Joel's bang on that Elise did more in 5 minutes than IU did, you know, and Eboe did exactly the same when he came on in with 5 minutes. But I've got to give it to Chris Richards. He looked solid when he came on. And up until that point, I think he took over from Mitchell, didn't he? But then he swapped over and Klein
went left back.
But Klein, I thought, had a superb game. Ducore, I think, struggling with fitness in a minute. Second time he's had to go off with cramp. You know, I don't know what they do in Ligue 1, but clearly it's not, you know, it's a massive step up for him and hopefully we'll see more in the future.
Yeah, and Klein did really well moving to left back until he tried to swing at the ball with his left foot to put it down the line and put it in Rosette instead. But we'll forgive him that as it was quite late on in the game. But so, yeah, great, great reception for the Palace from the supporters in the ground. It was, you know, I think we sold our allocation for what I could tell. There weren't many spare seats around me. These are the stats for the game, as you'd expect. Liverpool dominated possession. Only 4-3 shots on target. It's hardly anything in that. They had more shots off target. And some of those were reasonably close. But I saw somewhere in the chat, the commentary said when Salah, 2 foot wide, said, oh, that was close. And then when Zaha hits the post, they think he misses by miles. Sorry, can we have that back again, Nigel? The stats there, mate. Yeah, so corners, passes. Yeah, you know, this sums it up really from the point of view of possession. But for free kicks, you know, for even stuff and offside. So, you know, we matched them. We had a game plan and we stuck to it. and Patrick Vieira should take a lot of credit for what happened last night. So brilliant stuff, and it was great to be there. Here are the ratings. We're not sure where these came from, but we quite like them, with Anderson getting a 10 and a gold star. Look at that, 10 clearances, 3 interceptions, 4 block shots, 5 ball recoveries, 100% tackles won were one. I love these stats. They're brilliant, aren't they? And everyone had a good game. Ayu got a 6, or is that 5.5? Who knows? But thanks, Nides, for that. Brilliant. Good. So anyone on the panel here got anything else to say about the game last night? Gel?
Only stewards on that. Mitchell had a 6. He had Salah in his pocket. Jesus, who made that up? Literally, who made that up?
That was, we don't know where that came just from. But we thought
the only thing I will say, just mentioned in commentary about Joel Ward, he's now in his 11th season at Palace. I know it's not about the game, but very quickly. Have I missed a testimonial this year?
I think it'll be at the end of this season. I think it'll be the end of this season. I hope it's going to be the end of this season.
Well, I hope he has one. I should be extremely disappointed with the club if they don't do anything. But
I think the problem with the close season we've just had, it was so there was nothing of it, was there? There was no time to organise another fixture, unless they'd said that Montpellier game was his testimonial. So I think testimonial was always better as a special game, like Spironi's was at the end of the season. And again, the problem we've got at the end of this season, it finishes so damn late, it doesn't finish the last week of May. But let's hope we can squeeze in a testimonial for Joel Ward, because my goodness, doesn't he deserve it? He absolutely deserves it. So, yeah. So let's move on, guys, if we may. Lucy, just want to...
Can I just highlight a really funny comment from Mark Bushell? I still don't know how we didn't win and lose that game. And I can totally empathise with that. I think that's brilliant.
Well, when we got on the bus to go back into Lime Street, there were 4 of us and we had some colours on. And then 3 other Palace lads got on. And this bloke said, God, we should have won that, shouldn't we? God, we were all over him. He was sort of half joking. And these Liverpool fans were just looking at us as if we were bonkers. But it was quite funny trying to wind the locals up in that respect. And back in the hotel, in the hotel bar, it was just full of Liverpool fans, full of tourists. And it was the same hotel we stayed in for the Everton game at the end of last season, 50 quid more. Last night, 50 quid more because they were full, because it was Liverpool playing, not Everton. Thieving bastards, that's what I say. Right, okay. I want us to move on, because we've got about sort of 20 minutes or so. And as I said at the top of the show, there's been a lot happening at Crystal Palace Football Club in this last week. And one of the things that's happened is the under-21s have played twice. And I got to see the first game against Brighton, and we won 3-2. And we started with sort of about half a dozen people that played in the first team. So you've got Mateta there and Plange's on his left there. We started with a really strong side, but so did they. They had players that were in and around their first team too. And there was a classic case. I think Hughes played, didn't he? And one of their lads, I don't know if you've got a picture of this, Nigel, have you? With that lad that was rolling about like he'd been shot, when he was just touched on the edge of the box. I can't remember his name now, but I think Brighton paid £10 million for him. And we haven't got a graphic of that one, obviously. Never mind. We haven't rehearsed this. Never mind. But we won 3-2, which was great. And then on Friday night, I was out for dinner with some friends, and my phone was going ping, 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 ping. And it was the likes of Tom and a few others in the chat with all the updates from the away game at Man United. So the under-21 team for Man United were setting things up for the weekend for their first team, because we beat them 5-1 away from home. And how their goalkeeper didn't get sent off, he just pushed one of our lads over. He just pushed him over. And it was nothing happened, which I thought was bizarre. Gel, come in and help me out.
Again, the sycophancy regarding Man United and Palace, right, is that on Twitter, all they mentioned was it Robbie Savage's son, Charlie Savage? Did he score?
Yeah.
I think he had a blinder. Yeah. He scored, right? And that was it. That was all it was. And then a load of United fans came in and went, what about Charlie Savage? We lost 5-1. I didn't know the result. And I'm thinking, they're all going on, you know, loads of people going on about Charlie Savage and this great goal that he scored. And I'm thinking, oh, we've got, you know, about our backsides handed to us up there. But we had actually won 5-1. And I was like, I think people are getting the pox with this now. But But yeah, it'd be a nice time to play United soon, wouldn't it? While they're on the sides. Yeah.
We've got them next month. We play them at Selhurst next month. So here's the league table for the under-21s. It's not too clear, but look, Crystal Palace are top of the PL2 league. Wouldn't it be great to go and win that? So good luck to the lads in their next game. And if they do play at Selhurst, which I think they're planning to a few times, you know, get yourself down there if you can and support the lads. So let's look at the games that are coming up, because I think that last night's draw is only any good if we go and beat the Villa. But before we do that, let's talk about the League Cup. This time next week, I'll be in Oxford. Who's joining me? So in the chat, if you're coming to Oxford next Tuesday night, tell us you're going to be there. Oxford away. We haven't had a competitive fixture against Oxford since 1998. We won 3-1 away from home when a certain Clinton Morrison was on the score sheet. Now, the League Cup has been a bit of a kind of competition that we've sort of loved and hated over the years. We've made the semi-final 4 times, and we've lost on each occasion. 92-93 to Arsenal, 94-95 to Liverpool, year 2001 to Liverpool, and most recently, 2011-2012 to Cardiff. And I'll never forget that second leg tie in Cardiff, because that was the day my first granddaughter was born. And I had to make sure I went to see her in the morning in the hospital, and then I was able to get down to Cardiff for the game in the evening. And had she hung on a bit, my daughter, then I probably wouldn't have gone to the game. But anyway, you don't need to know that. So League Cup semi-final. We've never been to Wembley in the final. We play Oxford next Tuesday. Only one team on that pitch have ever won the League Cup, Oxford United in 1985. And let's see if we can go one better than the last 3 seasons when we haven't gone past the second round, ladies and gentlemen. Second round, last 3 seasons we've gone out, so we need to go one better on Tuesday night away at Oxford. So, as I said earlier, the point at Anfield is probably only any good if we beat the Villa. So let's talk about that game. Tell us your score predictions in the chat. How do you think we're going to get on against Aston Villa? 3 o'clock kickoff, Selhurst Park next Saturday. I'm going to come to you, Jill, first of all, for your prediction and any changes you would make to the starting 11. Hope that's not under the proverbial bus too much.
Well, firstly, I think we'll win 3-1. I can't see why Elise won't start. If not a buoy out in the, you know, just out wide. Maybe we need to give the core a game off if he's suffering with cramp. Just going back to that point as well, you know, he's come out of a league into the probably the fastest league in the world, where you have to be 100% fit. But yeah, I don't see too many changes. Well, saying I don't see too many changes, we won't be playing 5 at the back. That's a dead cert. But I'd like to see us play 2 up front and properly go for it, because I think if we can get Eze on song with Wilf, and they do seem to be forming some sort of understanding, I think they'll just cause problems from all day.
So you go 3-1, Elise to start, or if not, Ebuwe on the right flank instead of Ayew. And not 5 at the back, which I sort of get as well. Ian, what are your thoughts about Saturday's game?
I think, having seen what I have, and you know, said that we've got a lot more to come. It could be anything from 4-0 win to us to losing 2-0. I think in my heart of hearts, I'll be happy with a point, but I think we'll scrape it 2-1. I think we might play the back 3. With pushing the wing-backs on after that experiment at Anfield. They won't be quite so defensive. They'll be more offensive. I think with players going out, I can see Elise or Ebuwe coming in for IU, certainly. I'd like to see Edouard getting a start up front again. I thought he was unlucky to have been dropped for Anfield. I still think he's a quality player. And I think if we do play 3-5-1 or 3-5-2, then at least he will get the service that he actually needs.
Brilliant. Okay. And if as Jill said, Decore does get a rest, I don't think he will, but if he did, would you bring Luka in and trust him in the defensive
From what I've seen in the last two, his last two cameos, he looks far, far sharper than he did last year, last season. And we know why, because obviously there was stuff going on for him back. But it's nice to see he's got his head down and there's competition there. I don't think Hughes will get a start. Schlupp is looking a bit patchy at the minute, but we all know that he's just, you know, solid and steady anyway. But yeah, I'd put Luka in.
Brilliant. Joe, I'll come to you in a sec. Luka, when he was warming up last night at Anfield in front of the Palace fans, they were singing the He Comes From Serbia song, you know, and he was laughing and joking and smiling and waving. Elise, they were singing Michael Elise Runs Down the Wing For Me. Not a blink from him, not a look towards the Palace fans, nothing. Maybe it's just the way different players deal with it. But, you know, I sort of would quite like Michael Elise to turn around, at least acknowledge the Palace fans when they're singing his name when he's warming up. But that's probably for another time. Joe.
I'd take Hughes or Milivojevic starting in the middle. I think they're both, you know, they're both tough tacklers. They're both decent at passing. You know, one's right footed, one's left footed. Play either side of the centre. So, but yeah, I think we have now bolstered our midfield to a point where we can bring on like for like players. I'd like to think that we would have a player that's going, you know, someone that pushes forward more than being defensive. You know, we can have a defensive midfielder and an attacking midfielder, whoever decides to do that. I mean, obviously, it's got to be for me, Eze, to sit in that number 10.
Cheers, Joe. Thank you. Lucy, what's the opinion in the chat about Saturday's game?
Okay, so John CPFC says, today. Keith Madge Diamond says 3-1. Teresa Baker says 2-0 to Palace. Tony Quinn says 2-2. Paul McNamara Obi says 2-1 to Palace. John CPFC says 0-0. Tim Davis, I think 3-1 to us. Lost where I go. We'll go back to 4-3-3, says Kev Lyons. I say a 2-2. I can't see Elise starting. I'd like to see him coming on earlier, maybe sort of at the sort of 65th, 70-minute mark, as opposed to like 5 minutes or so. Steve Jupp says 2-0 to Palace. Tony Quinn says 2-2. Yeah, agrees with me. Andy Stacey, 2-0 to the red and blue. Daniel Garlick, 3-1. Jones says, depends what players Vieira puts out in the cup game versus Oxford, whether we win against Villa, I guess. Danny Tucking says 2-1 to us. Villa will score. John says, wish that Malcolm could start. Paul Holden, 2-1 to Villa. Alice Pin says 1-1. Kev Lyons sort of raises his eyebrow at my shock draw prediction. Chris Phillips says 3-0 to Palace. AU hat trick. Chris, stop it with the magic mushrooms. Like, he's not going to get a hat trick unless it's a hat trick of falling down. Paul Glant says, I think we have such a good team and squad 4-0. Tom 2-1. What else have we got here? John CPFC says we'll need a forward. Joan Wells says blinking train strike on Saturday. Excellent point, Joan. And there's lots of tube issues as well. Nightmare.
Yeah, okay. Joe, I'm going to come to you in a second. Lucy, what was your prediction? I wasn't listening properly.
2-2. I think we'll go for it. I think it'll be a draw.
2-2. And Ian, what did you say?
I said 2-1 to us. But
I did
say that, but John, I know what you said. I don't get where you all think the goals are coming from. I still think we need to improve in that. But as I was saying, I said if we play three and then a midfield five, then I think that's where it'll be better.
So you're saying 2-1, and I will go 2-0. There, I think we're going to keep the clean sheet. So there we go. So. What did I just read on screen a minute ago? Paul Bristow, he comes up from Plymouth, Paul, every game, home and away. He's got to drive up because of the bloody rail strike. Paul, safe trip up, mate. And he also, Lucy, if you could find this in the chat for us, please, mention about when the under-21s are playing next at Sellers Park. I saw it flash up earlier, but if we could just get that communicated shortly, that would be really great. Gel.
Don't know if you can see that. You see
no,
that?
No, I can't.
See that? Danny Topley last night. Yeah? For a 1-1 draw. As Danny Topley sent that to me after the game. He cashed out for £70. Don't know anyone that had Palace to draw 1-1 yesterday, do you?
No, but what I will say is at half time when we were 1-0 up, Liverpool were still favourites to win that, and then draw was second favourite, and then us to hold out and win was the third, was, you know, the longest odds.
Unbelievable. There we go. I love it when people tell us about their bets that come in, but how many times do they bet and they lose and we never hear about it? That's what I want to know. But there we go. So there we go. The under-21s have two games at Selhurst Park next month. Friday the 2nd of September against Tottenham, and Friday the 16th against Chelsea. Great opposition. Ooh. So I'm going to try and get to one of those or both of them if I can. I'll have to have word with Mrs. Noble. Make sure she lets me out. Okay, that's great. We're nearly done, guys, but it would be wrong not to mention Channel 4 Thursday evening, 9 p.m. Football Dreams, the Academy. Who watched it on the panel? We haven't rehearsed this bit, but did we watch it, guys?
No, not had a chance.
Oh, Lucy, did you see it?
No, sorry, it's...
I've got summer, a rubbish no panel telly. Tonight. Forget what I said at the top of the show about the A-team. I can't believe you guys didn't watch this. It was great. Tell us what you think in the chat of the documentary on Channel 4. Absolutely brilliant. Really good to see. Well, I was really impressed, actually, by the attention to detail of the staff to the kids, the way they looked out for them. And, of course, they've got big dreams, these kids. They're only young, some of them, but the way they handled it was brilliant. And yeah, someone said it's made me cry. And you got the feeling that, you know, some of these kids were thinking about the big money already, which is a bit of a shame, because, you know, one of the lads mentioned, you know, he lives in a, you know, South London council flat with his single mum and all the rest of it, and he's saying, well, when I start playing football, I'm going to buy my mum a house and a car and everything. And so they get it that footballers earn big money, but they've actually got to make sure that they get their feet on the ground. And I think the staff at Palace are doing a great job there. And the series, I can't remember how many episodes there are, maybe half a dozen. I think it follows a different group each week. So six of them. Thank you, Ian. So Thursdays, 9 o'clock, Channel 4. If you can't watch it live, set it to record. Make sure you catch up with it. Really worth seeing. Recommend it to you. We, Paul, thank you for mentioning this. The death threats to Joachim Andersen. Shocking business, really. You know, we talked about the incident during the game, of course. You know, it transpires on social media today. He's had between 300 and 400 really offensive social media messages, mainly on his Instagram page. And I did look at his stories earlier on this afternoon. I flicked through these. It was shocking stuff, what I was reading. It really was horrible, vitriolic, nasty stuff. And I really hope that the police get involved and the Premier League, rather, really crack down on this. They'll probably never find out who these faceless idiots are, but it's got to stop. It really is a very sad state of affairs on the back of the game that we all love. Joe?
It'd be nice if Liverpool Football Club actually did something about it as well. You know, they can apologise to him, on the club's behalf. But there's no place for that. Unfortunately, it's not a new thing. You know, Wilf's had it before, and other players will get it as well. So, you know, I mean, they literally are so blinded, some people, that it was quite literally not his fault. And but it is what it is. Just he'll get on with it. I imagine he might be a little bit alarmed, but it's just part of being a top footballer, I'm afraid.
Absolutely, absolutely. And my travelling companion, Yasmin Broom, says it's disgusting, made worse by Liverpool fans, defending it by saying he went down too early. Couldn't agree more, Yaz. Okay, so we've done that. Just one more thing to talk to you about this evening. We've got a few competitions going on amongst the fan base this year. We've got Super 6, Lucy's Super 6. There you are, Lucy, highlighted with 22 points. Oh, look, I've got 22 points as well. And Andrew Milne on 28. Congratulations, Andrew. And Nigel Crouch's up there as well. So Ian Donald, a few Colin Squires, and a few others there. Brilliant. And we're also doing a fantasy FPL league. Well done to the Wilfie Wanderers, who are top. 156 points so far after two game weeks. I am second bottom, I think, at the moment. I had a shocker of a week one. 25 points is all I got in week one. But I had a much better second game week. I had 68 points in my second game week. So I'm green arrows all the way now. Green arrows all the way.
What I'm going to say. Number five.
I know what you're laughing at, Lions. Yes. Not in a forest.
Yes. Yeah, well, I noticed that one. I noticed that one. That was a good one, wasn't it?
Fantastic.
That was a good one.
Fantastic.
Yeah, very good. Who thinks these names up? Brilliant.
Ian, Lucy. Sorry to interrupt you. It's not too late to join those leagues. You can find the pins and the codes and all that you need on all of the socials. So just have a scroll through those trees. And I can see that as a birthday present to yourself, you want to join both the leagues. So do that tomorrow and have a very happy birthday as well. Look at that, 2-for-1.
Happy birthday, Teresa, for tomorrow. That's brilliant. Yeah, do join the leagues if you haven't joined already. Super Six or FPL, you'd be very, very welcome. So, guys, we come to the end of another show. That hour has flown by, everyone. So my thanks to Lucy Usher, Jill Holyoak, and Ian Lyons, and from me, Ian Noble. Thank you very much, and we'll see you again next time, everyone. Good night.
Cheerio.
Thank you.